April. Probably be going for light intensity designation. And we certainly, we've got a long list of, and as part of this kind of putting together this funding strategy, this big roadmap, spreadsheet of what pots of money we're going to go for, but certainly the, your typical DOD program, some of your rural development stuff. We're looking at the EDA. We talked to the folks from Dayton Development Coalition this morning about that. So, yeah, we're broadly looking at everything. Looks like we have a little bit of match, local match to play with. So, again, to open this thing up, we're looking. And we will have cost estimates. That's part of what we're doing here. But, again, we're concerned about we're doing a traffic impact study as part of this. If you want to talk a little bit about that. So there's going to be improvements, you know, the intersection, intersection pushing this in, and then it's going to be shop ready.
Yeah. Basically, what I gave you there is a list of all the deliverables that we're going to have done by March 1st. Surveys, environmental studies, wetlands and stream delineations, traffic impact studies, master plan, and then the water and sewer studies on how do we service this site. So, we're intending to put together a full packet for the submittal for the JRS.
We've got what, preliminary permits from EPA?
We have well site approval permits from the EPA at this point for these wells to be in this location. And we're going to be submitting to ODOT the traffic impact study and the line grade typical design of State Route 127 in Shane Road. So we're going to have a pretty good understanding of our infrastructure costs before March 1st, really.
Okay, so it's not going to be, you're not trying to bring water from elsewhere, you're tapping right there.
We're getting it there. We're trying to break it down into a smaller scale of, how do we serve, initially anyway, our 200 acres that we're talking about purchasing. This entire quadrant's about 300 acres, and we're going to try to figure out how do we serve that in the long run, but let's get a foot in the door, let's understand how we service the 200 and go from there.
So you would drill new wells, would there be a treatment facility?
Yes.
With
There's a sanitary treatment facility up here, and then we would have on-site drinking water facilities over here to treat the water if we need to. We're actually doing the test borings this week to determine what kind of test or treatment do we need to do on the water before we distribute it to people.
You have a stream, what was the outflow?
It's going to wind up being land application for the sanitary. The farmer that we're talking about purchasing this land from actually owns probably 1,000 acres in the county. So we're talking to him about land acquiring some of his other properties as well.
It's being done in the county already, so.
Right. Yeah. About this, sorry.
And then part of that is it's the water and the wastewater both will be designed so that in the future we can accommodate the other three quadrants, as needed. Plus, if you'll notice the where that says Hazelwood, there's existing businesses and things up there. One of the things that we're going to approach them, there's some existing a small package plant up there, plus a large septic system. The goal is to approach all those people and try to get them on a community treatment system, which will make EPA happy, which will make the site more appealing. So the thought process is to try to get this site up and running, but plan for the future so that we can accommodate everything up there.
On Hazelwood, there's already
the pilot station and the kind of, what would they turn? Yeah, why would they make that turn?
Okay, thanks. I was trying to think.
That hotel that
Nikki.
We didn't include that as part of this project just because of the time frame and things we're trying to get done, but the thought is once we figure out, get all our ducks in a row, we'll approach those people and everybody that's dealt with them seems to feel that they'll be receptive to you know, getting rid of that type of stuff because they've got issues also. So,
so why are we looking at 200 and not 300 acres? For the financials?
The Kemp's.
Basically, the Kemp farm is about 200 acres. You know, right now we're trying to keep this into as bite-sized chunks as we can. You know, we have, then we're dealing with one property owner for the 200 acres. And, you know, if we can at least get started dealing with one property owner that owns the majority of this quadrant, then we can start piecemealing some of the others.
We have a very, because we got a, Commissioner's got, you know, $250,000 grant to do all the studies, and it came with a March 1 deadline date that you got to spend it or lose it. So I think there have been some, you know, preliminary discussions with Mr. Kemp and the family, and it probably would have been less discussions, if any, over here. So
I'm just curious about two thirds of the question.
You know, we've got to get four custom agreements with landowners and things. And once we get this and get something where we've got something to show people, then we can go around and talk to the rest of people. But we had to start somewhere. When we first started looking at this almost a year ago, we decided that the best option is break this down into something small that's palatable at this point in time to get it all done soon.
And for what it's worth, the studies that I mentioned we're doing, we are doing it for this entire 300 acres. The traffic impact study, the water and sewer studies, you know, those are all for this entire quadrant. So we can in the future go and acquire other properties as need be in this quadrant to make the whole development work.
I guess worst case scenario, again, we're phasing this. We're designing this to phase. If this person absolutely does not want to sell, at least we've got 200 viable to work with and go to market with.
In terms of the JRS, I know there was a preliminary application. Was it because of timing that this project wasn't able to submit for that? Is that going to be a negative to our application on April 1st?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I mean, we can find out pretty quickly, but and I know you guys have been in at least once before, probably twice for JRS. What I would encourage, because it's a competitive process and statewide, highly sought after, you know, three or four times the applications as we've got monies to fund them, would be as you're looking at putting together the new application and an in-depth review of sort of the shortcomings in terms of the points rating from the last application and figure out the specific areas where you lost the most points. And try to go after those areas hard to get your points increased. This is, I mean, from what I've seen, this is not a process that politics influences. This is one of those programs that it's sort of, here are the numbers, here are the competitive scoring areas, and you either score high enough to get funded or you don't. And so you've got a lot of competition, you've got a lot of really good proposals from all over the state of Ohio coming at this thing really hard, so the proposal has to be top-notch, well thought through, complete in every aspect. I know that our JRS staff has in the past, and I'm assuming that they still would be willing to come out, because I think we had some JRS staff out here to talk specifically about the process and even more specifically about your application and why it didn't fare so well in some areas and fared better in other areas. You know, that might be worthwhile. I know they don't do that while they're in a process. So if you want that, you have to get staff outside of the process, because the appearance of impropriety and coming out and spending time with the community while the community is preparing their application during the application period, people screaming that, you know, they were treated unfairly or too many communities ask for site visits in the month that applications are due and staff just can't respond, and then we get screamed out because we're treating people unfairly because some people get visits and other people don't. So, you know, if the applications are due in, I don't know, March or April?
It's April 1st.
April 1st.
Yeah, I would suggest before the window opens, if you've still got time, to get Nathan or somebody from JRS that's doing that now out to sit down and talk through the old application, to do the critical path analysis of what you did, what you didn't do, how you scored, where you didn't score very well. Talk through if there are ways of improving upon the project. Talk through this project. Talk through any changes in the JRS process that may have occurred since you applied in this round of applications, and understand those pretty intimately before you start putting your application together.
What's Nathan's last name?
Harbor.
Yeah,
Harbor. Okay.
He's still there?
Yes. Nate. And that's nothing out of the ordinary. Right. We do that pretty routinely with communities. So.
Okay. Great.
Are they, Kevin, able to get access to other applications sent in by other folks from the state to see how they were scored?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And the whole list they can have access to, and the matrix, I think, of how they scored. Yeah. I know the total scores in the entire list are available, and I think the matrix is available as well to show how the individual scores broke out, so you can see how people scored and sort of get a sense for why they scored the way they did.
Now they have to go to Columbus and spend the day pouring through them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Be using the place at lunch.
That's right.
Let me ask you this. Is the next priority, assuming this eventually gets built out down the pike, to go across the street here to build the other three quadrants? Like to take it over here or north?
Just depends on, that's going to depend on what demands or what cooperation with demands. I mean, that's something, you know, the general goal was to look to build out all three quadrants eventually, but two of the quadrants are pretty much bare land. One is currently has development on it, which
is right, yes, right.
So, you know, it may be. If this gets up and running, the other existing truck stop may want to get a facelift, and they may step to the plate. I mean, you don't know how it's going.
Bob, you said this morning this guy right here owns substantial land.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You said that.
Yeah,
we'll
be
on. What are you talking about? It's the Northwest Quadrant.
He owns.
Which, by the way, we're north of the Northwest Quadrant.
Here,
we were pointing to the wrong side earlier. So we're there.
Your house is. Let's take your house. Okay.
It just depends on how it plays out.
Yeah, you know, right here, it's thinking
like that.
Because of the south and then this. These are for sale now, and those for sale.
Okay.
And also the Northwest.
Okay. Just to follow what Kevin was saying about the competitive nature of this logistics distribution business right, in the area, let's help me understand so that I can be a better, more articulate advocate for you all. Obviously, you're on site, for heaven's sakes, and you're only how many miles from 75?
It's probably about 25, 30 miles because I drive to Dayton often. So.
Okay. So, obviously, you're on this huge east-west. You're only 30 miles or so from the main north-south. And you can build the suit, essentially, within relative parameters here. It's easy off-on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Kevin was asking the point about workforce. How many people are willing to drive how far for a low-level job? And what kind of skilled workforce is already in place, and what additional skills might people need to be trained in to be able to do the jobs here? There's a difference between moving stuff in and out with some companies and moving stuff out and out with Home Depot. I mean, you know, they do their own training, I guess, but it's pretty sophisticated inventory control. It's unbelievable.
Right.
To me, you know, when you're dealing with 114 different stores being wherever it is, serviced out of one building, right, three times a week. I mean,
right.
It's high-tech computer-driven work. I'm sure there's no way I could learn that without some serious training. So,
oh, I could teach you.
But, given the fact that there are a lot of other sites that are going to be applying for money, have gotten money in the past, trying to position themselves to get the same limited number of folks out there looking for sites, you know, you guys need to have this, the tight sales pitch that makes it, and obviously, potentially, the availability of the land price may be a heck of a benefit. Again, the ability to build a suit, affordable housing in the area, perhaps folks might be coming in from out of town to be taking these jobs, especially at the management level, the school piece. But if you guys actually have yet sort of like the one page, one side, this is why you got to come here, because it's the best option you're going to find?
No. Part of what we're going to do towards the tail end of this project, which is only 6 or 7 weeks away, is we'll do a marketing piece delivered to the county. Again, somewhere whoever's out here advocating for this position.
Sure, I saw that in your work plan. I apologize.
Yeah. Okay.
There is workforce labor, though. I mean, you're 10 miles from Richmond. You're probably like 6 from Eaton.
Yep.
You have a lot of different villages. We're only a couple of miles away. There's 4 colleges in the area now. Maybe not necessarily in Preble County, but they're within Richmond and adjoining us, so they're all around here. So the workforce is becoming more intelligent, I guess.
But when you guys are probably doing this, it's just that, you know, you know, it's like you got 15 seconds to capture people's attention and visually in terms of the content, et cetera. So, what a rip.
Yeah, we're trying to get our arms around everything. This morning we're talking about, we're going to be, well, the commissioner's going to be talking about some sort of maybe branding, you know, maybe rebranding this. I mean, just down to, hey, do we want to, like Corridor did, you know, do you want to put 70 in the name? You know, things like that. So, that we are looking at all those aspects, but understanding that perception is everything.
Sometimes it's selling the sizzle.
Mm-hmm. Well, that gets you to the table, in my experience. Right. You know, that gets you past the 65 other sites over 5 states. I want to get to the short list. And when they actually drive out here and dig into it, you know, we'll start feeling pretty good, again, especially if it's a county-owned park, and you know, have that leverage to go to the Clayton model, you know, free land or whatever, you know. Yeah.
And that, yeah, I think that for some, the direct on 70 visibility is a snicker.
It's a nice sign.
Wasn't that one of the interests that Miami University had, was that they would have frontage right on 70 and be visible from the interstate?
Everybody's going to know where it is.
Key things that Miami liked.
Yeah. Again, looking at the types of players we were hoping to design this thing for, you know, your Wall Street type of companies. Fortune 500, your Home Depots, your Dells. I mean, Dell down in Westchester. I mean, that was a consideration when you saw that they wanted that visibility. That's why you saw that 8-foot-tall Dell sign. So as you know, it's out there, and that's another thing on their checklist.
Absolutely.
That could be a differentiator.
How many vehicle trips a day?
170 or more. I'm not sure. Not that many, around 50,000. Okay. We'll have that on the marketing.
Well, isn't that part of the study that ODOT will do?
That's part of our
statistics.
Yeah, those numbers are out there.
Yeah.
But for the people that you would market to, the visibility is important. They'll want to know that number.
Right.
And you should probably give it to them.
Yeah.
The past few years, there's been a couple companies interested at these sites, and they like the wide open visibility that this, you know, non-congested area has to offer. And they also, I think, like the workforce out here because we're an agriculture-based community, and you've got a lot of part-time farmers who are looking for a second part-time job,
right,
or full-time job. So the only thing it lacks is water and sewer, and if we can just get it to there. I think we'll be okay.
You know, there may be another play here from a marketing standpoint, too, as you think this thing through. One of the interesting things that DHL did until they did the uninteresting thing, was that they understood the workforce. And so they had a ton of part-time workers that they were paying abysmally low wages to, but they offered a full health care package because that's what that community wanted and needed. DHR understood that, saved millions of dollars on the wages because they've got a lot of farmers that needed health care. Mm-hmm. And they were
ready. Right.
Yeah, and the pay was not important. We didn't want to work for nothing, but it wasn't a Dayton pay scale or a Columbus pay scale. It was a, my primary income is my farm.
Right.
I'll go be a sorter.
Exactly.
Right.
And so, you know, so yeah, they sorted when they couldn't plow and when they couldn't, so, you know, I mean, it worked that, you know, the sort operation commenced at about 11 o'clock at night and finished about 5 or 5:30 in the morning. So a lot of those people would come in with 5-6 hour shifts, some of them 3 days a week, some of them 6 days a week. But very few of the 8,000 were full-time employees of the sorters. Most of them were part-time picking up health care benefits. If that's a critical component, you know, that might provide you with an advantage to market to some of these people, sort of in a non-traditional sort of way, but nonetheless, something that provides significant cost savings to a company and still have a workforce with training and with an awfully strong work ethic. And that's another thing that, you know, we hit on a lot, you should hit on as well. I mean, that work ethic amongst the farming community in particular is incredibly strong. I mean, people just work. It's about work, it's about who you are, it's in our psyche, and these large Fortune 500s, and especially the Fortune 100s, aren't used to that and don't know that a lot of them intuitively. I mean, they're used to the East Coast and the West Coast and the South, and I can assure you the work ethic in those places is not the same as it is here. You know, it just isn't. So you've got a strong work ethic, you've got a non-union environment, you've got potentially some creative space to design jobs around that can save the company a lot of money. So there's a few pluses here, I think, that you can exploit as you're thinking through how to approach companies.
What are the negatives?
No traffic. Getting here. We're getting out of here.
Besides the rail, what would your negatives be?
Identity. You know, you're going to struggle with identity, I think. And you can overcome that.
As in, where is it?
Yeah, where is it? Well it's near Eaton. Okay, where's Eaton?
Probably down there. Not in the Dayton Airport.
Now that might work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're going to start probably with southwestern Ohio, because almost everybody knows Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And your whole point about getting in the door, maybe you get in the door saying this is in Eaton or this is in Preble County, you're just not.
No.
Mm-hmm. So the initial sales pitch needs to be different. Weaknesses that I see, you know, you land a big client. They take 1 million square feet, they hire 600 people. What's that do to your workforce here? Sooner or later, if you load this park up and fill it out, you're going to start depleting enough of the quality workforce that I think it'll be a problem. And you say, the unemployment rate is 15%. I understand. But you're going to deplete with this size of a development, and especially if you move out to 300, you're going to rapidly deplete the workforce here. The closest workforce. And then the question, I think, becomes where do those people come from and are they willing to drive from an urban area where there's a lot more people, you know? If the company pays $15 an hour, how many people in Dayton that are good employees are going to drive from Dayton to Preble County to work for $15 an hour?
But then there are quite a few people that would drive to DHL every day from Dayton, which is what?
Mm-hmm.
That's an hour drive.
Yeah. But most of those folks, especially the part-time sorters, which made up 7/8 of their workforce there, were coming from the surrounding farm areas. And, you know, towards the end of their tenure, one of the things that they were having to do to get just bodies in is they were loading buses in downtown Dayton and Columbus and Cincinnati. Literally, people were coming and parking somewhere in a remote lot in the city. They were getting on a bus. The bus was taking them. And it wasn't a bus. Buses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were taking right directly.
I see that road you lined up at 9:30.
Yep.
Indeed.
And that's because there wasn't enough people, and they couldn't, you know, they couldn't get
sustain it.
Right.
How do you let those people know though? that our taxes are cheaper here than what they would be in Montgomery County. I mean, that, because, I mean, you mentioned that as a selling point, but you wouldn't be able to use that as a selling point until you've got those businesses here, right? Or is there a way that you market it as a?
No, you do the analysis. I mean, and I would suggest that you not only do the analysis for here, and that's both a strength and a disadvantage, by the way. I mean, the fact that you don't have the income stream from the income tax is a disadvantage because it's one more source that you can't rely upon to fund things that you need to do, whether it's land or infrastructure or whatever. What we do at the state level is we compare ourselves to the other states. Given the clientele that I think you'll try to market yourself to, I think you'll want to do both. I think you'll want to compare the state tax rates versus other states to get them here first, to pique their interest, that short burst of 60 seconds. And then you'll want to do the comparative analysis between here versus a Dayton versus a Columbus versus a Cincinnati. Whoever you think your competitors are, you're going to want to be able to do those numbers first to ensure that when you make that assertion that it's correct. And then make the assertion that this is a cheaper place to do business, that, you know, the work ethic, the, you know, probably lower wages, if in fact that's true, after you investigate it.
I will add on the income tax, you know, one of the several things we're looking at is the possibility of a JED to get a 1% on there. It's tailor-made for something like this. So.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. That's an easy way.
Well, almost anywhere these people will go, there will be an income tax. You know, there certainly is in Clayton. The other big deal that we were looking at with the Fortune 25 company, they were focused in on a site in Bend area. The majority of these developments are going to occur in places that do have an income tax of some kind.
Yeah, I was talking to the commissioner a couple weeks ago, again, in my experience, that never ever came up in all the years of doing deals. What's the income tax? You know, because they usually pay very little, if any, corporate income tax.
Right.
They tend not to care as much as a...
Well, sure. No, not in Ohio. No corporate franchise tax.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are two states in the country, by the way, South Dakota and Ohio, would be the only ones with zero income tax for corporate franchise.
I did local economic development for about 15 years for a local state, and my experience then was the same as yours, that nobody paid attention to local tax. The last 3 years, we have had several major corporations just in the Dayton region, and my counterparts in some of the other urban areas have had similar experiences. The corporate executive said, we are not paying the city income tax in Dayton. We're going to move to Miami Township, which is 10 miles south. Mm-hmm. Because of the corporate, or because of the city income tax, not the corporate, but the city income tax, they weren't going to pay the 2.25, 2.5. And there was a huge deal in Cleveland,
right,
that moved out of Cleveland. And income tax was a significant issue. And it's, you know, interestingly enough, it's not a significant issue for the employees. It's a significant interest for the CEO, the C-level executives that are making $500,000-$700,000 a year. When you put a 2% cap on that, it's more. And so it used to be not true. It's true now. It's not true in every case. I mean, I can't tell you that we run into this constantly, but we do run into it, and it's a factor. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it was sort of a non-factor. It was, everybody pays income tax. Now the margins are getting so thin, people are looking so hard at these deals, at the details of the deal, at every detail. Everything else is equal. They're going to gravitate to a no tax or a 1% versus a 2% tax.
And again, through the JED, we'd be looking at 1%. So,
yeah, I think you're good.
I think we may be fine. Yeah, you know, versus a 2, 2 or 1. That gets up there.
The national trail tax would affect this area, though, right? The income tax for National Trail School.
It's a National Trail School District.
Yeah.
So they're probably
employees income tax. Tax.
Sorry.
Tax.
They do have both, but there is a 1% or 1.5% income tax for him.
One and three quarters.
Yes.
Or it could be tied to the city of Eaton.
They have 1.5%
also.
Right. if it's already in the school district and the tax is in place. I don't know if you can say we're going to do a JED with another community and push that back. I don't, my suspicion is you can't.
Well, I think you could do a JED, but you'd be adding on to, if that's in that school district, I got it, that's the first I heard of that. If that's in that school district, there's a 1 3/4, I don't think you're getting out of there because in taxation, there's uniform application from a legal standpoint. I think you could put the JED over it, and now you're 2 3/4, so you have to look at that then.
And do you know in Ohio, do school districts that have income tax versus property tax, can be abated? Can income tax be abated?
I haven't read into that yet.
I think it's part of that uniformity, clause. That, no. There's been a lot of cases where a charter municipality citing, hey, we got our own little constitution, we can do that. I thought that they got struck down.
Are you probably right on that?
So,
okay.
I think you've got to get over it.
A lot of folks are trying to do that, and as an economic development tool, they're looking to abate that and bring the constitutional issues, unfortunately.
I was thinking we had both
property
tax.
You do. Well, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
City of Eaton definitely has
But you can abate the property tax, probably, but not the income tax.
You can get 15 years for a CRA on that, on a property tax. That's easy.
But if you do that, you don't have a TIF.
No, you're 15 years of TIF. I mean, you can cough out 15 years in the back end.
At the back end.
Yeah. And again, my experience
is getting a bond for him on that though.
Yeah, well, you need a dedicated revenue stream, right?
Right.
Every deal is different. I mean, like, again, Home Depot, we helped with their development agreement. And I mean, it had CRA for a number of years, then it switched over to TIF for the remaining up to 30.
Yeah.
We had a special assessment at the same time. It was very complex, but every deal is a little bit different. Front end, back end, So.
You thought about how you'd market the property itself, the raw land, and the cost of doing that? I was going back to your earlier comment about the county holding onto the property and doing the ED versus trying to flip it to a developer. And one of the components is, once you've got the site and the infrastructure and the financing and all of those things figured out, then you have to get in the marketplace, and you have to get in the marketplace and compete with the big guys and gals. That do this for a living, that make a lot of money doing it, because this is a high stakes game. Can the county compete? Do you really think you've got the wherewithal to do that, or can you bring somebody to the table that sort of does this for a living, that's real good at it, that's not attached to their own property, so they would not have a vested interest in marketing theirs first and yours second?
I'll chime in, Dave, because he's done this a lot. But from my perspective, I think the framework, if the county wants to keep it as their own park, is, obviously, in a private development scenario, you're going to hook up, hopefully, with a good, commercial, industrial, guy or gal. Commercial broker. My thinking would be, yes, you hook up with, someone, I want to pick an expert, that's in the big boxes, if that's what we're going for. They're the ones out there usually combing, the streets with that. Now, you also have the other issue, I think the commissioners have talked about a little bit, of, okay, that's the outside person, talking to the world, dealing with the companies and the site selectors. Then you got, do you have that inside person? Yeah, from the economic development staff standpoint, that's an important piece of this,
right?
I mean, you can only lean on Dayton Development Coalition or others for so much. So, I mean, that's not my place to answer that.
Yeah,
but what's your take on it, being a developer?
My take, I've seen the instances where a outlying property owner has relied upon a developer that has his own property closer in, where that property just hasn't been marketed.
Right.
The developer's trying to flip his property that's further in. He's got his own concerns there. So I don't know that I would recommend a developer be a joint or be the sole marketer for this. I would recommend either some internal ED type staff or hooking up somehow with a broker. Commercial real estate broker, like a Leschel or CBRE, somebody like that.
Yeah.
But right at some point, there has to be someone at the county level, you know, that, that when these prospects come in, as you know, you've got to represent the county. You know, if your broker's not in those all the time, you know, so...